Hello and welcome to this Cloud of Data podcast with your host, Paul Miller. I have been following the emerging data market space for a number of years, trying to understand the ways in which some of the companies who are beginning to appear there relate to one another and how they offer a value proposition to customers. During this series of podcasts, I'm going to be talking to stakeholders from a number of the leading players in the data market space: Microsoft, Factual, Kasabi, InfoChimps, and a number of others. Each of these podcasts will be made available on the Cloud of Data website, as well as through iTunes and perhaps a number of other syndication routes. Please feel free to check back from time to time as new episodes become available. In the fifth podcast in this series, I talk with Nick Edward, EVP of BizDev and Marketing at Canadian BuzzData. We discuss some of the ways in which BuzzData relates to other data markets, and also the ways in which it's actually closer, perhaps, to content management and content sharing tools like Huddle or Box. Have a listen to our conversation and decide for yourselves where you think BuzzData sits. Over to Nick. Nick, thank you very much for joining me for this podcast today. Before we delve into some of the detail around BuzzData and data markets, can you tell listeners a bit about yourself and your own background, please?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me, Paul. My name is Nick Edward. I'm EVP of BizDev and Marketing here at BuzzData. I joined BuzzData in September last year, 2011, having actually been originally an investor into BuzzData. So in a weird way, I'm a bit of a Victor Kiam type of chap. I liked the company so much I came to work for it. Prior to that, I was running a telecoms company in North America. Well, North American operations of a UK-based telecoms company doing things like Wi-Fi on trains and connectivity solutions for moving vehicles in general. Prior to that, I'd done a couple of startups in the UK and had spent 5 years as a strategy consultant for my sins way back when.
Is that all?
Yes. And I'm actually 72.
Yes. And it's presumably the North American operations of a UK company that explains the accent and the fact that you're now based in North America.
Exactly. Yes. It's just throwing it in there. Okay. That and the fact my wife's Canadian.
Right. Okay. That's fine then. So, BuzzData, what's the elevator pitch?
Good question. So, BuzzData essentially makes data sharing and collaboration easy, engaging, and effective. That's the short answer. The longer answer, I think, we'll come to. But at the heart of what we're doing is a belief that data is inherently valuable and really doesn't get as much care and attention as it should receive. This is reflected in BuzzData in a number of ways. Most particularly, kind of our emphasis on the addition of kind of context a narrative around data sets, so that it really does make it a far more engaging and fulfilling experience. You get to the information and the data quicker using BuzzData.
So context and narrative around a data set, is that fancy marketing speak for metadata, or is it something else?
So I guess you could position it like that. I think intentionally on BuzzData, you don't land on in a data room, which is BuzzData is essentially the aggregation of multiple data rooms. We give every file its own data room. And in that data room, not only does the file obviously have kind of like a dedicated persistent URL, which in itself is pretty damn useful. Secondly, then we add a bit of a tool set around that. And I guess we're at our kind of version one of that tool set. But it does enable you to attach kind of, for example, say the data set is sales and marketing forecasts. I've probably got a PowerPoint presentation about that. I've probably got some articles that have informed our approach. I I probably got a visualization or two. And we essentially enable you to build the story, for want of a better description, in your data. Because an awful lot of people don't necessarily want to engage with the race and numbers in the first instance. They want to know why it is that they're looking at the data, what they need to do with it. So one of the features we introduced recently was kind of tasks, enabling the data publisher to actually direct somebody's engagement with the data set and essentially provide them with a call to action.
So you're kind of down at the, down not in a derogatory way, down at the sort of the SharePoint level. It's about teams collaborating around data?
Yes. I mean, there is a way in which we could be viewed as a kind of SharePoint replacement. I mean, I think that begs a whole separate question. A kind of ECM, is that a market that's kind of ripe for a bit of a shakeup? I'd say yes. We just believe that there is a for want of a better description, I'm really apologize for saying this, there's a Web 2.0 way of doing data, and particularly kind of file sharing. It's files traditionally are shared as kind of like either via email. I'd say that probably 90-95% of data gets shared via email, or they're kind of static in a hierarchical file structure. And that makes engagement really difficult. And I think what we're really doing is up here at Buzz Data is kind of mixing that up, giving you a way to engage on data, which is fundamentally turning it somewhat on its head and making it just a hell of a lot more efficient.
Okay. And how granular are the data bits, the data elements that you deal with? Are we talking about files all the time, or are we down to sort of individual facts?
For the most part, they are data sets containing more than single pieces of data. But, I mean, there's anything from kind of a spreadsheet with 20 lines and three columns or a single column through to some pretty large files and Buzz Data. We support pretty much every file type going apart from audio and video intentionally. So you can actually upload anything you want onto Buzz Data, whether that's a starter file or some form of kind of GIS file, KMZ, et cetera. We can support PowerPoint. I mean, all the data might be in a PowerPoint slide. So we've if there's one thing that I've learned, it's to try not to prejudge what people consider to be data, and secondly, actually, what people find interesting. I've long stopped guessing that.
Probably a good idea, yes.
Yes. Yes.
So where does the money come from? How is Buzz Data financed?
Well, we haven't done a kind of a VC raise, not yet anyway. We kind of focused on building product. We've got a team of pretty seasoned entrepreneurs here. So we built a good product last year, released it, spent a lot of time talking to our market, and I'm pleased to say that we're now selling product, which hopefully will put us a bit more in control of our own destiny than several other startups I've been involved with previously. I think one of the things that's key was the learning from talking to our customers in really the fourth quarter of last year, after we launched our beta, we were having a conversation with a lot of people that were already started to use Buzz Data as a publishing platform. And typically the conversation became, this is great. Couldn't we actually use this ourselves internally? And the short answer is, yes, you most certainly can. So we focused a fair whack of our development efforts over the last quarter in building something or I guess accentuating something that we're calling a hive, a beehive.
Oh, dear.
We've done that. Thank you very much. And the hive is essentially going to be, well, is a private instance of Buzz Data. So then you can do with that what you will. So if you want to share it, use it just for internal data sharing. If you want to invite kind of select stakeholders into your private hive. And we've got a number of these kind of up and running at the moment. And we're about to launch that as a kind of low-touch sales model kind of sooner rather than later as well.
Sounds interesting. So these hives, are they running on your infrastructure, or is it an appliance I put in my data center, or do I download something?
In the first instance, they're on our infrastructure. The Hive is, but not necessarily the data. So we can really offer a considerable degree of flexibility as to actually where your data is hosted to address any kind of security concerns. And we can go behind the firewall if we really have to. Okay,
so presumably all it needs is a URI and you can point to it across the web.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then you'll be controlling the access to that. This really is kind of market led because I think one of the things that surprised me, I guess, in this whole space, and we kind of talk about the space as open data, is the degree to which I think actually Rufus Pollock described open data initiatives a while back as often a plaster, a band-aid for a North American market, for actually kind of data dissemination issues. And I'm aware of a major kind of open data portal that last year when it released a new tranche of data, actually something like 35% of the hits on it in the first kind of 48 hours were from internal IP addresses. And to us, well, to me at least, and to the rest of the team at Buzz Data, that suggests that there is a data dissemination issue. Open data is just another aspect of data dissemination in the first instance. And I think one of the things that we're kind of setting ourselves as our goal here at Buzz Data is to solve data dissemination, whether or not that's public, private, across an organization or a team, it doesn't really matter. That's just a kind of characteristic of the data set.
Okay, yes. And presumably a lot of that is around, not the data itself necessarily, but the tools you wrap around it and the context, going back to an earlier conversation, that you wrap around it.
For sure. And I think it also speaks, I mean, essentially, we're going where the data is. I mean, that's the vast majority of data will probably never see the light of day in terms from an open data perspective. But that's not to say that there isn't a very real requirement for to help people be able to move data around internally and engage on it kind of efficiently and productively.
Yes, and to know what they've got.
Most definitely. I mean, I think that's it. As a user of something that you mentioned earlier in the conversation that I won't name, for kind of 5-6 years in a corporate environment, I actually stopped using that particular tool after a while because we just couldn't find anything on it. We'd post stuff and onto a kind of this ECM platform, and then it would just get lost. And we were building essentially a repository which just wasn't useful. And I think if it's not useful, then you've got to question why you're using it in the first place.
Indeed, yes. And I think that's quite a common problem.
Yes.
So in terms of Buzz Data then, how broad do your interests go? You're based in Canada. Will you take data from any country, any domain, any type of data except audio and video?
Very much so. I mean, obviously, it needs to be consistent with our terms of service in particular. Particularly if somebody's publishing, then we kind of prompt them to check that they have the rights to be using the data in the way in which they're intending to. We do give, certainly on the kind of open public side of Buzz Data, there's an excellent license regime which does give people the flexibility to control how they want their data to be used. So you can select a kind of Creative Commons license, and then that propagates throughout the site, even if people kind of clone the data, etc. One of the things that we want to do sooner rather than later, and we can certainly do with this Hive model, is choose where people want to store their data. So we can very easily spin up a server, say, in Switzerland if there's a requirement that the data needs to physically reside in Switzerland. At the moment, our data center is in Toronto and everything resides there, but that doesn't need to be the case at all.
So you're using your own data center. In these days of the cloud, you actually own physical hardware?
We do own physical hardware, yes.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that you don't have any sort of external VC investment, so that's quite an upfront cost.
It pales into significance next to salaries,
well,
but yes,
okay.
Certainly a cost. But it's there's very smart ways of doing this, and whether we may well move to something that's cloud based. And unfortunately, that won't be my decision. I'll defer to my technical colleagues on the merits or otherwise of doing that. But I think it does give people the flexibility. I think increasingly there's going to be people really will want to know where their data is. If you're an organization that puts any store on your data, then that's an important thing for you to know.
Indeed it is. And I mean, it's possibly too hard a question for anyone to answer necessarily, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you have any responsibility? Do you have any liability? And in the loosest sense, if say I'm a UK based company and I send you some data and it's full of personal information, which of course European law wouldn't like me to send to Canada, do you have to do anything about that, or are you simply covered by your terms and conditions asking me if I'm allowed to do what I'm trying to do?
Well, we're a common carrier, so effectively we are covered by our terms of service, but at the same time, we do fully recognise that, of course, we have a responsibility to that, say, much the kind of same way that YouTube will react to kind of a copyright infringement. You have the ability to flag something as inappropriate all across the site and Buzz Data. We'll certainly react to that flagging and investigate it further.
Right, okay. So what's the business model then? How's Buzz Data going to generate money? How is it generating money?
So everything to do with buzzdata.com, the central hub platform, is free. And while you're going to be, you can work privately on Buzz Data, sooner rather than later, we're going to kind of cap the amount that you can actually do privately on the site. But at the moment, you can certainly keep a data set private and just share it with a number of collaborators to work up a data project. And we're seeing a lot of people work on things privately and then get it to the stage actually where they want to then turn that public. We make our money, and we'll continue to make our money from kind of the hives, from teams and organizations that really want to set up their own instances of Buzz Data and start to do things like be able to control and create private tags, private topics, and then really start to build a, I think of it as a three-dimensional kind of structure for their data, where you can see kind of people, topics, the interaction of the data sets in a way which just isn't a flat hierarchical system.
And so your customers then are working on the site. They're not coming to it via an API, or they're not coming and downloading data and taking it elsewhere. They're actually interacting on buzzdata.com.
That's a good question. So it depends on buzzdata.com. We do see people that obviously kind of download the data and take it away, but an awful lot of people stick around and then work on their data kind of within Buzz Data. We're not designed for people to really work on the data set online. We don't think that people work with data like that. What we really are is a place to kind of store it, disseminate it, the best place to put your data. We've got excellent version control, so you can kind of upload version 7 and provide 250 characters worth of kind of release notes around how this is different from version 6. If I was trying to upload version 7 and I hadn't downloaded version 6 today, I'd been told that my data was potentially out of date, et cetera, et cetera. So we're a great environment to run data projects, things that evolve through multiple versions and iterations and involve different collaborators, things that need perspective to get moved on.
Okay. And can you do anything then in terms of locking or other, you know, tracking capabilities where perhaps a team of half a dozen people are working on that Excel spreadsheet and they're all updating it offline and then they're all trying to put their changes back into Buzz Data?
At the moment, the short answer is no. There's many workarounds that you can kind of post a comment in the social thread and say, guys, I've got this, give me 20 minutes, which is what I kind of do. We're actually working on a feature which I'm referring to as Piggy's Got the Conch, which will be the ability to essentially kind of tag in, tag out, and just to let your other collaborators know that should be coming sooner rather than later. I'm very conscious of the fact that one of the things that we need to differentiate against is, and a problem that we need to solve is kind of version proliferation on email. I think probably every day of my working life, I've received some form of spreadsheet along with 10 other people. And by the time I've normally got to it, there's been three different versions back in my inbox. And I'm not sure which one I'm supposed to be looking at now. I'm not sure which one's accurate. And it's that type of thing, which is just strikes me as utterly bizarre that we've come this far in the last kind of 10 years and longer with kind of the development of the internet, and yet the means to share and engage on data has just not really been looked at to date.
Yes.
Hence Buzz Data.
Okay. Who are your customers then? What kind of person or what kind of organisation is coming to Buzz Data today?
In the short term, to date, and I think for the immediate future, it's people that really do set a lot of store by their data. So people that are working with data, people that need to share this, communicate it, people that need to have the latest files, etc., at their fingertips. As I mentioned earlier, this particularly kind of the development of our Hive product is in response to people asking us to do something about their problem. So they came to us in the first instance typically because they had a mandate to kind of reach more people with their data. But actually, when we kind of scratched the surface, they found that actually the problem was probably a couple of stages downstream. In actual fact, we can certainly solve the kind of public dissemination, but actually solving the private dissemination issues might be of far more value to them.
Okay. And are there APIs available? I mean, I could see how some of these capabilities might usefully be built into various enterprise products that are already in existence, you know, within the enterprise.
Yeah, for sure. So we've got there is now our kind of second pass at an API. We're actually doing some more work on it at the moment. We definitely are bolstering our API functionality. It's already good. I think it's going to get better. We've done it now so that you can kind of create data sets automatically, etc. We do see ourselves very much as a platform which in an ideal world there needs to be an ecosystem around. We're not really a kind of a brand name, nor do we have any intention of becoming one. I think that Buzz Data will be the kind of, if everything goes to plan, there will be the kind of people in the background knitting it all together. But we've already seen some good uses of the API around some of the data that's on the site, developing of kind of apps. Recently, actually, the City of London, Ontario, should hasten to add, used Buzz Data to host an app contest, and the data was all up in Buzz Data. I think a lot of the apps were driven via the API for that contest.
Sounds good. So where does the growth come from? And is that growth simply sort of steady, incremental, more of the same? Or is there something that happens that causes an explosion?
It's a jolly good question. I think so. I mean, we do have a bit of kind of two businesses going on within Buzz Data. We've obviously got the public side of things, and the more publishers that come to the platform, the better. We're already working with people like kind of the Globe and Mail, and which is a Canadian national newspaper, Global News, etc. The Economist Intelligence Unit, that we just launched a competition with them last week, where they gave us the livability index that they publish every year, and also a cost of living index for 140 cities across the world. And we're using Buzz Data to run the competition and ask people to create a new livability index based on the EIU's data. And that launched last Tuesday. And so far we've seen some great engagement and interaction on the data sets.
Yes, I saw that one. They're trying to find alternative views on what the most livable city in the world is, aren't they?
Absolutely, yes. And it really is, I mean, it's, I think this is a great example of a really good open data project, because there is a there's a tangible call to action. And I think if certainly if leaving aside kind of the Hive and all the private stuff that we've got going on the open side of things, there needs to be far more alignment of tasks and aims with actually the publication of the data. I'm not sure that open data initiatives will really see the benefit if there isn't a bit more beyond simply like, well, I've made the data available, now what? Because there always is going to be a bit of a so what factor in that. I think it needs to be aligned to whether or not it's specific kind of municipal-led targets and initiatives or what the problems are. I think there's the engagement then, I think, will spread beyond a hacker community too.
Yes, and I guess sites like Kaggle, which was featured in Business Week a couple of weeks ago, you know, with their focus around competitions and data, is one interesting model to attract the certainly the hacker community. But your point about trying to align with sort of real citizen issues is an interesting one.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think what Kaggle's doing is phenomenally interesting, and I think I think there's more scope to expand that beyond just being kind of algorithm based data context for data scientists. I mean, I think open data will really work when we've got kind of a high street florist that thinks, what is the data that the city is making available that kind of tangibly benefits my business or allows me to make decisions that will lead to new service offerings or better quality of product offering, etc. I think those are the things that I think are most exciting about the space.
And you've mentioned open and open data a few times. In terms of Buzz Data, what's the split between the open stuff, which presumably is explicitly openly licensed, and the closed commercial stuff?
So the split at the moment, certainly on buzzdata.com, is that there are far more public than private data sets, but the private is growing at a really healthy rate at the moment. That's on course to kind of change sooner rather than later. And obviously with the kind of Hive strategy, that distinction is going to become somewhat academic sooner rather than later.
And is there any notion, I mean, clearly the private data sets at the moment are being put up by an organisation so that its employees and perhaps its contractors can work together. Is there any notion of extending that and actually selling access to data?
Not from our side, not anytime soon. And from that perspective, I guess we're not a data market. I just don't see the growth in demand. And I think that we're aware of a whole host of companies that are kind of going after that, and best of luck to them. That's not where we're focusing our kind of efforts or attention.
So you're sort of placing the value in a slightly different place then to some of the others. You're not putting a price on data. You're putting a price on the space in which people come to work with data.
Exactly. I mean, I think it strikes us that in the first instance, there is kind of a problem with data. And I think it's incumbent upon us to kind of try and solve that in the first instance. And then kind of transactional value of data then becomes kind of like potentially a secondary consideration.
So are you actually closer then to startups, say, like Huddle or Box, than you are to some of the more traditional data markets?
Yes, I think there's definitely a sense in which we can overlap with both Huddle and Box, in that we are we're coming at this, and this is a bit of, I guess our strategy has evolved somewhat. It's still consistent with I think with kind of the original vision for Buzz Data was to become kind of a GitHub for data. And I think what we've seen is that actually there's far more interest in the enterprise side of kind of GitHub than we'd originally anticipated. And we are, like in hopefully most best startups, kind of market driven.
If they want to succeed, they presumably are, yes.
Yes, quite.
So you mentioned, you know, notions of branding a moment ago, and you said that you didn't have a very visible brand and that perhaps you didn't need to have a very visible brand. Can you explore that a little more? What do you mean?
Sure. I mean, I think for certainly on the Hive side of things, we're kind of going to be white labeling. It will be essentially kind of a powered by Buzz Data proposition. And first and foremost, we're going to allow the kind of Hive customers to put their own branding across their Hive. On the public side of things, again, I think the value to the data publishers is in their own kind of branded homepages, the Economist Intelligence Unit, Globe and Mail, etc. And they obviously bring their brand to that and curate their presence on Buzz Data. And then the quality of the data sets, really, we kind of let them speak for themselves.
So you would rely almost entirely upon their existing brand? You're simply giving them a space to lay out their wares?
Yes, what we do certainly is pay close attention to kind of what's happening on the public side, and if we think that we can be, I'm going to call it data-ing, trademark pending, kind of matching communities with the data sets, then we'll certainly wade in and do a bit of that. I mean, there's, to an extent, we definitely do and have done a bit of kind of data marketing. In fact, we probably know as much about that as anybody.
And especially on the public side, with this open data that anyone can come and use, how important is it, if at all, to build communities around that data?
I think it's very. I mean, I think it's a two-way street. It's not people shouldn't ever expect to kind of publish on Buzz Data and there'd be a ready-made community. I think what we're doing is allowing people to publish data and then drive their community to it. So when done properly, we've seen some massive kind of spikes in traffic and surges of interest around particular data sets when they've been featured on the news or when an article's got kind of exceptional prominence in a national newspaper, say. Then we do see the community that kind of is engaged with that particular story does come to check out the underlying data, and then a percentage of those actually will further engage with the data, not just kind of look at it, but potentially kind of scrub it, come back and say, you know what, I think this number's wrong, or this is jolly interesting, but actually the story from my analysis is X, Y, and Z. And we've seen that happen a number of times, and it warms my cockles every time it does.
And presumably the emphasis there on sustaining that engagement should be with the data owner. But do you play a role there in making it easy to sustain that engagement over the long term?
Yes. I mean, I think we certainly do. I mean, we obviously we've got a kind of our own community that we're engaged with and marketing to, and we publicise data sets across that. We're adding in more features around the discoverability and kind of recommendations all the time, making that better and better, so that if you come to Buzz Data for the Vancouver dog database, for example, which was a data set which was featured heavily in a story by Global News recently, then we'll let you know that we also happen to have the Toronto dog database at the same time.
Okay, what is the Vancouver dog database? I just have to ask.
Your interest is peaked now, isn't it? It's I think Global News obtained it under a Freedom of Information request, and it's off the top of my head, I think it contains about 26,000 entries for kind of all the dogs in Vancouver. There's some interesting stuff in there. I would go and have a look. You can see the articles and you can see the visualizations that were produced around the story.
I think I might have to. So this whole series of podcasts is about data markets in the broadest sense. And the concept of a data market is certainly something that the analyst community is getting quite worked up about. But is it real and is it useful, or are we just lumping vaguely data-ish companies together to give them a label?
That's a jolly good question. From my perspective, I think data markets have essentially always existed. I mean, you can make an argument that Bloomberg is essentially a data market. I think the current term to kind of act as a catch-all for companies like ourselves and Factual, etc., I'm not sure that that is relevant or necessarily holds true. I think, certainly, it's not something which I spend an enormous amount of time thinking about, I have to say. From Buzz Data's perspective, we think that that data dissemination, not a particularly sexy term, but that is a problem that is worth solving, and that's where we're focused. Then that who you're trying to disseminate to then just becomes kind of a secondary order kind of question. I want to share it with the world. Okay, we've got a solution for that. I want to share it with my team. We've got a solution for that, or across an organization. So I think I'm not sure that data market is a particularly useful term, because you could radically expand that to include, well, a vast number of market research or anybody that does anything with data.
You could indeed. I could keep these podcasts going forever.
Yes, you could.
it's just good a pity no one's paying me for them. That's yes. Is. So, how do you grow from here? You mentioned GIS data, for example, back at the start. Is there a role for you in beginning to provide the tools that allow people to manipulate that data on the site? Or is the growth more in terms of even more metadata, even better version control, and the sort of the management side of things rather than the use?
I think it's probably going to be a combination of both. I mean, certainly our core focus is being on kind of the best place to put the data. I mean, you wouldn't really want to run Google Earth necessarily kind of entirely online. Like, I've had some experience with that, and it's always fairly torturous. So I think there's still a case that a lot of people will want to take the data kind of offline and work with it in that way. But there's no doubt about it that the ability to kind of create some simple visualizations, say, might be of interest, although that's potentially it's kind of double-edged sword, because there's a, well, I think visualization tools are there are a lot of them. They are becoming far easier to use, certainly easier for non-techie data literate people to do. I think the proof of the pudding is going to be actually in our ERU contest, where we in the best city contest, where we've asked people to produce a visualization, and I'm sure we're going to see some interesting stuff there. I don't see this being a requirement that really just rules out a lot of people from being able to engage in it. I think part of our job might be just to direct people to interesting visualization tools that are out there, it's not. I don't see that as a killer feature for us.
Okay, so better management and better version control and stuff first.
Yes, I think that's it. I have to say, I think we have built a lot of software there. I think we've got something which is eminently fit for purpose, and well, hopefully our product strategy will become more and more informed by more and more feedback from customers. We've got good stuff. This is good feedback to date. This is what's in our current roadmap, and I'm sure that that's going to be the cycle going forward.
Okay, and high profile things like the EIU competition presumably help to bring new people in and get new perspectives.
Absolutely. I mean, it's. It certainly doesn't do us any harm in terms of kind of spreading our message and getting in. But fundamentally, there's no substitute for kind of use cases, and we're going to be, I hope, in a position to tell you about those very much sooner rather than later. We've got some exciting things going on.
Sounds good. I look forward to hearing it. So, Nick, thank you very much for your time. And you can go and check the logs now for all those hits on the Vancouver dog database. From all the listeners.
I told you I was an expert in data marketing now.
Oh, yes. So thank you very much for your time, Nick, and I look forward to hearing where Buzz Data goes from here. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Thanks. Bye.